Welcome to the Tap Room exclusive. I'm here in Cleveland Heights at the Bottle House Brewery and Meadery. I am with Jason Calacragas. Did I get that right?
You did.
All right. Well, I asked Brian before we went on just to make sure. I always do, even if anybody's last name is Smith, because you never know if these days it's Smythe. Brian Benchek and Rob Tittle of Northeast Ohio Craft Brewery News is here joining us as well. Thank you all, gentlemen, for your time and being here. Our first episode is going to be about beer. That's how this place started. Is that what you're saying, Brian?
Yeah, that's correct. Yes.
And you guys were founded in 2012, right?
Yes, we were.
And was that when you actually opened doors here?
2012. Let's see. It's 2000. Yes. So we opened doors in 2012. Spent a couple years building the place out. Initially, we were going to do a brew on premise, and that's what the idea was. But that never actually came to fruition. We never did any brewing on premise. We opened essentially like a craft beer bar. We were pouring a lot of brands and beers that really weren't poured, at least in this area at the time. I mean, you got to remember in 2012, I think we were one of five licensed breweries in Cleveland. It may have been six. And obviously it's grown exponentially since then. But
oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's wild.
And
we continue. Oh, yeah. And so, you know, so we started off and we didn't really have an idea of what we were going to be. All we knew is we wanted to make a space that the community could enjoy and come on in and have a beer in. It just organically morphed over the years to what it is today. And, you know, a big part of that was Jason. He started bartending, I think, on Sunday nights for us. I actually probably only saw Jason maybe once the first year he worked for me.
Yeah, so we opened in May. I got hired in August, and I'd been bartending at another craft beer bar. I'm just kind of getting interested in the whole thing. And like I said, yeah, we had a handful of our own beers, solid list of guest taps, and I just would start showing up and asking the guys what they were doing. It was Brian and another guy, Dave, who kind of were the original founders. And yeah, I just started, I don't know, making suggestions like, hey, what, you ever thought about brewing this? You ever thought of brewing that? And kind of diversifying what we were currently doing, because there wasn't really an idea as far as be this kind of brewery.
And it's, you know, back then it felt like the Wild West. I mean, we were just making whatever we could make. And we were making small batches. We're doing half barrel batches at a time. So it was, you know, we had freedom to just kind of do whatever. You know, we're hand kegging these things, shake carbonating these things, and then throwing them on draft and just kind of tearing through them. And, you know, we did that for the first 2 years, year and a half, and we kept growing into larger, I guess we were using plastic fermenters at the time.
Yeah, we had got up to like 110-gallon conical fermenters that were on wheels so we could roll them in and out of our walk-in cooler and able to chill them down and cold crash and stuff like that. Yeah. And it just got to the point where we had maxed out everything we could possibly do with this janky BOP system, to the point where it finally became feasible to tear it all out and put in an actual brewery.
Right. And we did that. That was 4 years ago.
Yeah, 2015.
And what was the inspiration to actually brew beer? Like, what did you do before this that... Yeah, that made you decide to kind of flick that switch and go, you know, I'm gonna focus on beer.
Well, prior to this, I owned a glass blowing studio downtown. I was a, you know, hot glass. I did a lot of design work with glass, and it really beat my body up. And for a variety of reasons, when the lease was up, we decided it was time to move on. And, you know, through a series of crazy coincidences and chances, we stumbled upon the brew kettle and did the BOP there. Dave Schubert and myself, this was my original partner, and we thought, hey, this would be really fun to do in Cleveland Heights, you know. And that was it. That's the way we got into beer, was doing the brew on premise stuff. Spent a couple weeks in Germany at the VLB Institute, you know, trying to figure out what the hell it meant to have a commercial brewery. And then came back and started looking for space. And just, again, there was no master plan here. This really evolved in a very organic way. So, you know, I had, you know, if you asked me a year prior to opening this place or starting to build it, would I be I don't know, brewing, it was not even on my radar. So it was kind of, but it's you know, it goes really well with the things I enjoy doing. I love cooking. I love gardening. I you know, glass is an art. To me, beer making is an art, and it's an expressive
I'll point out that chandelier above the tap room, Brian, that's one of a number of pieces he made. Yeah, Brian's always, but it was always an interesting guy for me because I came, I was in university, I went abroad, I taught for a while, and I was kind of just looking for my way, and I kind of fell into the craft beer world and just started learning. And Brian's a funny guy because he just does everything. So he's welding and he's plumbing and he's doing the electrical and he's brewing and he's doing this, and you just assume he's, it's kind of funny, like, where did this guy learn all these things? And I think it was building your glass studios when
yeah,
you started
was,
doing a lot
right,
of it.
Right, sure, sure. And I come from a family of tradesmen. I mean, so it's always been around it, but literally the actual tricking the city into letting me do this stuff with, was a skill I learned building the glass studio.
What was the first beer you guys made here? Do you remember?
It was an IPA.
Was it an IPA?
Yeah, I think we call it North Coast IPA.
Okay.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah,
yeah.
Which is still on your menu to this day, right?
No. Erie Coast.
Erie Coast.
It's morphed.
Okay.
Several years. Yeah. There's a story behind that.
What's that? Do you want to tell?
Okay. A local home brewer had a beer called North Coast IPA,
gotcha.
And he kind of got mad at us.
I get it. Yeah. It's one of those things. There should never be tension in
that's
this business.
Exactly right.
You know,
that's
we're
exactly
here to drink
right.
some beer and have
it.
A good time.
It's not like it was, you know, a name that was the most original name of all time.
No, it wasn't.
So it wasn't too hard to change.
No. Yeah, absolutely. And Rob, how did you come to Bottle House? How did you become familiar with these guys over here?
So I actually got hooked up with these guys probably about a year ago. They had their first Keepers of the Craft Fest, which was in 2017, and it was supposed to be the first annual, but they've kind of gone a little different direction. I'm sure we'll get into their upcoming project here that they've got going on over at Van Aken, but they decided not to go forward with it this year. May do it again in the future, but again, I'll let them talk about that later. But they invited me up for it, and
I think I was one of like the first like 100 or 200 followers.
I think
of
you were
the page as well. So I think I was on there. You're on my radar right off the bat.
I think you were. You were one of the early followers, and I appreciated it. And you guys reached out to me very early on. I think I had been doing it for about not even 6 months, and you invited me to come up, set up a little table, put out some business cards, introduce myself, tell people at the fest, you know, what our page was about and what our mission was, and we did a little giveaway while we were here, put up a couple you know, baskets from some local craft breweries that donated some stuff, and did a little raffle, and you know, the whole thing's just kind of blown up from there, and these guys are partially responsible for that. I think they supported me very early on, and I've been big supporters of them as well.
Credit for Rob's success.
Full credit.
100%.
Everything's because of Bottle House.
That's right.
So you guys get going here in 2012. You're brewing, and how long did it take to kind of start expanding your tap list and start going into doing some others? You said your first one was an IPA.
Yeah, sure,
was that just because
that's what it was? In
that's
2012,
it
wasn't even the market. It's just that's what was exciting at the time.
Right?
You know, like, hey, all these crazy hops. You know, we're using Cascade, which is still one of my favorite hops. But I think it was not having a plan allowed us just to do whatever the hell we wanted. You know, it was literally, what do we're using vials of White Labs yeast at the time. You know, so we just had this boxes of
thousands of vials of yeast.
Right.
You guys were saving for something.
We were going to send them back, and we were going to get Chris White to come in. Like, if you send 10,000 vials, and we just ended up throwing them in the recycling bin, frankly. But my
cleaning.
Yeah, Jason is a mad cleaner. He just came through and threw out all of our cool stuff.
So I'd been bartending for about a year, and then the other founder, Dave Schubert, had decided to step down. So I filled his role brewing, which is very much just, you know, Brian telling me, do this. And we just got in the habit of talking about beers. And, like, I think one thing we've always tried to do here is have a really balanced tap list, whether or not, without, you know, brewing, we have to have this beer on at all times. Let's make sure there's something dark. Let's make sure there's something light. Let's make sure there's an IPA. Mm-hmm. Let's have something in this kind of realm. And so that, I think, has allowed us to be really fluid. So it doesn't always need to be this stout or this porter, but we always have something for that drinker. We don't always have an amber ale. It might switch between A brown ale, a Belgian, a beer de gare, something. So I think we always try and keep that in mind, the drinking experience, because we are a tap room. At the time, people weren't really taking much to go, so making sure whoever came in here was getting a pretty interesting experience.
So that kind of leads me to a question, I guess, then. You know, in 2012, there was no real plan, I guess. What now, 6 years later, would you guys say really is your brewing philosophy? Like, do you consider yourselves traditionalists? Are you more experimentalists? Like, do you pigeonhole yourself into anything? Or is it just kind of, we just brew and feel? Like, what we brew, what we want to brew?
I think that's, well, first of all, Jason brings to the table a vocabulary and a depth of knowledge of beer that I frankly don't have. So, you know, it's always a conversation with what we're going to do, and Jason provides a foundation for us to kind of, and for me to kind of riff on, frankly. I mean, he can, you know, when it comes to traditional styles, when it comes to just the historical nature, Jason has his finger on the pulse of all of these things. So it's always a collaborative conversation. And, you know, if you could, we still don't have a plan. Let me just make that really clear. I mean, if you would have seen us a week, you know, last week we come in, Jason was on vacation with his family, and his, and we came back and like, well, let's figure out what we're going to do this week and next week. Now, again, going with keeping in mind that we do want a diverse tap list and we want to be brewing with things that are interesting to us. We're not going to, I mean, you'll rarely find, we've got a couple, I guess, flagships in quote beers that we have, but mostly we're brewing what we want to brew and what we want to introduce a lot of the community to, because a lot of, you know, when you're in the world of craft beer, you assume everybody knows what a grisette is. Every, you know, so, you know, doing something that exposes the community to different styles and kind of pushes their limits is something I think we enjoy doing.
I think we've also kind of accidentally, over the years, started to become really, really inspired by the ingredients. So, and by making a handful of really, really good local connections around town, that in some ways has started to kind of precede a lot of the brewing. So we became acquainted with the Tom's Foolery people and were big fans of their whiskey. And so when they offered us their first, or our first whiskey barrels, it was an idea, okay, how do we fill these things? And so we were, you know, so excited to have these two barrels there. And now we've got, you know, however many back there. And projects like, you know, we talk to the guys at House Malts and you'll start chatting and he'll start talking about millet and he gets excited about millet. So you get excited about millet. And then the next day we're brewing a millet beer. Right. It's like, all right, we'll bring us, you know, 100 pounds or whatever else. Or we'll talk with guys like Jeremy Umansky, who's the chef down at Larder on West 29th. And he's this amazing forager and mushroom expert. And you can't talk to him without just getting swept up in it all. And so that led to us brewing our first Groot. You know, now we've done 2 to 3 different ones, and that became a partnership with Spice Acres. And then, so every time we find these partners, it kind of, the ingredients just kind of fall into place.
Right.
And it's always nice. That's not nice. It's more than nice when that happens, because the beers end up becoming really unique, and they start to capture a kind of sense of place in the sense that, yeah, this is a very not just Ohio beer, but kind of a Cleveland area beer. It has these ingredients, and it was made at this time. You know.
Right.
And it's about like literal community, you know, relationships. So, like Jason mentioned, several there's guys over at Spice Acres, Jeremy Umansky, Rising Star Coffee. You know, these are Tom's Foolery. I mean, the list goes on and on. And you know, when the idea of a Groot wasn't that Jason and I said let's brew a Groot. It's just we were talking with Jeremy, and he said, you know, I can get you spruce tips. Like, well, what else can you
have
get?
Have you ever brewed with mugwort and yarrow?
Right.
And
like, well, no, let's do that then. Yeah. And so, you know, it goes with our overall philosophies. You know, it kind of goes back to the question, like, what did we want to do? What was our overall goal with the brewery? It was ultimately to have a place for community, you know, and that's, you know, literally at the core, if you strip it all back, it's we want a space where you can come in and be part of something, part of the community. So that kind of extends out with the way we are and the way we just naturally build relationships and kind of see how that, where those relationships take us.
It's great that you bring that up, because I talk a lot about on my page how you guys are probably, at least in my view and probably in the view of a lot of other people that are really hardcore craft beer geeks, one of the, if not the most underrated brewery in the entire Cleveland, if not all of Northeast Ohio. Is that by design, do you think? I mean...
No, we'll happily take more ratings and more business.
I guess that's a bad wording for how I wanted to propose the question, but do you think your maybe lack of focus on maybe a certain style has maybe held you back from being bigger than you possibly could be?
No, I think... well, first of all, I mean, we can't keep up with the demand for the beers that we brew. So, you know, for us, we're not. So there's a couple of things. First of all, we do not have debt. We don't owe anybody anything. So I'm not. I'm the owner. I don't have a partner. I don't have anyone really to answer to. I mean, I have to answer to Jason because he's like my wife. But you know, we don't. It's what we want here, and that's what's driving it. So we're not saying, oh man, we need to make sure we can service this debt, so we need to brew something that everybody wants. We need to brew the latest and, you know, the most popular style because we need to sell a ton of beer. We don't, you know, we have no intention of distributing. Our model is different. We want to be part of the communities that we're in and let the community kind of define us as much as we can let them. I mean, and that's what we do, you know. So, you know, being underrated, I guess, isn't intentional, but it's. But we're not, you know, we're not doing all of the events. We're not pouring at all the. We're just. We have lives and we have families, and that's very important to us. That we're not living this thing every waking minute. So,
it's kind of a weird thing. Because I like this kind of stuff, I'll crunch the numbers at the end of the year. Like, hey, how many barrels of beer do we make? How many gallons of mead? Mm-hmm. And, you know, this year versus last year, like, it might not be that much. It wasn't like, oh, we made 300 beers and we need this 20% growth, because we didn't build a brewery that was oversized to kind of grow into it, which is a model that a lot of guys do. We kind of brew this brewery and fill it, and if we have enough beer, it's like, okay, cool, we can kind of take a breath for a minute,
right.
As opposed to just kind of going. Right. And as far as the beers, you know, we might be underrated as far as under the radar, but I think the quality of the beer, you know, the people who know about us seem to really appreciate the quality and the time and effort that we put into it. And so I guess I feel like we have, you know, fewer ratings than some bigger breweries, but the quality of those ratings might be higher.
I agree with that, definitely. You may be underrated in your own community, but you guys have experienced some national acclaim. Talk about the two awards that you recently won from the Great American Brewers.
We were very fortunate. It was the first competition we ever entered, and we sent a handful of beers to Great American, and we won a bronze medal in the historical beer category for that a beer called the Spring Groot, which is kind of it's like an amber saison with ingredients foraged on Spice Acres in the Cuyahoga Valley, which was a very experimental beer that became a really strange, like, tap room sleeper hit.
Yeah.
Like, last summer, it was like we didn't have a Hefeweizen on tap. Everyone's just pounding Groots back and forth, which is a really, really weird thing. But, like, I would you know, be behind the bar, and I'd come in the next morning, like, Brian, we sold, like, 50 pints of Groot last night. Like, and I think it's a really unique beer. And one thing I think we kind of go for is also, you know, the beers aren't unique to be unique. So we are always trying to, no matter what the ingredients are, we're trying to go for something that's still very drinkable. And I think we do a pretty good job of that. And so we won a bronze medal in the historical beer category and another bronze in the aged beer category for actually a 2-year bottle-aged version of a Belgian quadruple. Mm-hmm. Even before I started, you and Dave had always kind of had some Belgians kind of thrown in the mix.
Absolutely.
I think we both kind of realized a few years back that those were kind of some of our favorite beers.
Yes.
You know, I love English ales and German ales, but if I had to, you know, choose an international beer to focus on, it'd be Belgians.
Yeah.
And so we've kind of ended up becoming somewhat of a Belgian brewery.
Yeah.
As far as just because I think those styles are really unique. They're fun to brew. They're unpredictable. And they kind of change. They have the kind of life of their own, which is really fun.
Absolutely.
And so this quadruple, which was just a great big giant beer, it took on these really nice age notes, and it won for us.
Yeah.
So that was really cool.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. It's pretty exciting.
What beers would you like to kind of get the word out a little bit about that you currently have I'm enjoying the community pills right now, mm-hmm. which is fantastic. Highly recommend anybody who likes pilsners definitely come and get this. What else would you like to kind of highlight?
A quick note about that pilsner. That's brewed at ale temperatures in the 68 to
really?
70 range under 15 psi. And Rob and I were discussing this a little bit before we got started here. We don't know if it's the high pressure lager is actually a thing, but if you ferment a lager under pressure, you get the same reduction in ester production as you would at a cold temperature. So you can actually ferment this, which we have fermenting in the back right now, in the same 5 to 7 days as you would any ale, and there's no need for lagering for 3 months. So it's actually pretty interesting. But that's a little side note on that one.
That said, we still end up lagering.
We do.
Not to an extreme degree. But that was actually a really nice thing kind of in our portfolio is when we opened up lagers. The problem for us was just we have 3 fermenters back there, mm-hmm. and we have 19 taps here and 24 taps in Lakewood that are almost always full. And with 3 fermenters, that's really tough. I can talk more about how we kind of juggle that. Mm-hmm. But being able to do lagers in a little bit quicker time was really opened it up for us. So
it's huge.
There was a time I think we had, 30% of the menu was lagers at some point between a Vienna, a Baltic Porter. We were doing a Rauch beer. Beers that I'm excited about. I mean, we're both, I think, we've been doing, we'll talk about sours more later, I believe, but I think all the sours we're doing are just excellent. Our first ones we were doing were from single barrels, and so they were kind of what they were, and some of them were really, really heavily acidic, I think more than we might have liked, but they're still good. Now we've have enough barrels that laid down that we're blending, so I think the sours we have on tap are really, really approachable, even though they're kind of funky and acidic. We're seeing a lot of new crossover sour beer drinkers who are kind of curious and they're kind of walking into it. So I think we would both say that if we were going to become more known for anything at this point, it'd be the barrel-aged sour program we have here because that's, as much as we love everything we do, that's really the culmination of our experience and time.
Yeah. I agree.
Very cool. This has flown by, man. We've been going for 23 minutes. This has been awesome. A lot of information on this. Anything I might have missed or Rob, maybe, do you have another question or anything that I might have not gone over before we close out the beer segment?
Yeah, I guess just one more question, and we kind of hit on this earlier, with the traditionalist versus the more experimental. So the hot thing in the market right now, obviously, is the New England Hazy IPA. And I see Brian rolling his eyes here a little bit. So I'm going to go there. So about 6 months ago, you guys posted on Facebook a post that kind of went a little bit viral. So maybe talk about what that post was all about, what the intention was, because a lot of people really rallied to your defense and thought it was an awesome post, but you had a lot of other people that came out and said, you guys are stuck in the past, what are you doing?
So that was
why are you slamming the style? It's so hot right now. Talk a little bit about that post and how it went viral and what it really did for your business.
So that was such a funny thing because,
I mean, that was intended to be for Jason and a couple other of our friends. It was not, I was harvesting yeast, and I thought, this looks, really disgusting. Let's just poke some fun at the style.
And so the funny thing is, we, about 2.5-3 years ago, I had been traveling through Vermont. And I tried a Heady Topper and some Treehouse stuff. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of, we'd both been kind of like, hey, have you heard about this stuff? Not so sure about it. And I tried some and I was, hey, this is a fantastic style when done right. And so we brewed a New England IPA 2.5 years ago.
Right.
And
it was,
I remember people in the tap room being a little bit,
the call following. That's correct.
And people were a little bit, had never really seen anything like that. And it was like, for us, it was like, yeah, that was fun.
Yeah.
And let's brew something different. And so we did a West Coast after that and moved on. And we've brewed Cult Following now 2 or 3 times. And, people are like, I can't believe you don't embrace the haze. It's like, no, we brewed these beers. We like them. That's not the only style we brew. And I think at the time, we'd really been talking a lot about the Hazy IPA, how it morphed from a full-bodied wheat ale with bitterness into a milkshake you know, right. needs at least 18 tropical fruits, becomes essentially five alive.
Right.
And it had just kind of gone and gone and gone. And so we were kind of, I think that post was much more poking fun kind of at that. Like,
yeah.
And it's the funniest thing. We get these, like, we try and use 100% fruit in everything, whenever yeah. we do, between the meats and everything else. And you get these guys who come to the back door all the time, these, like, flavor salesmen who have these yeah. little yeah. Petri dishes, like, here's raspberry, and here's this, and here's that. And you kind of put two and two together, and the stuff's cheap as opposed to fruit. And you start to look at the six packs on the shelf. You're like, well, how is this, you know, milkshake IPA at this price? And you realize there's a lot of guys using these. They're called natural flavors, but it's a right. you know, colorless little liquid here.
Right.
And so I think we were just kind of goofing around. And if you read the post, like, I don't know, I thought it was funny.
Yeah.
There was like, you know, 200,000 people. Yeah. And there's a bunch of like, yeah. by the end of the thing, it's a bunch of guys like just in French and Russian just yelling about hazy IPAs. It just kind of really, really got pretty crazy.
I mean, in the style, you know, if you're looking for a juicy, you know, a juicy hoppy profile, there's nothing that you says you can't get that out of a clear beer. I think that, you know, and there's obviously good examples of hazy IPAs and examples of hazy IPAs that are just haven't been cold crashed and we're dealing with a ton of yeast. And, you know, if it's a poorly made beer, I don't care if it's a trend or not. And frankly, I really don't care. If people want to drink hazy IPAs, go for it. It was just so, at the time, it was just the conversation everybody was having. And like Jason said, it was just getting a little bit ridiculous. And so it was more of just poking fun. But yeah, it wasn't, you know, we've got a cult following in the fermenter in the back right now. So it's not like, it's not opaque. I mean, you could hold a light behind it and see through it, but it's, you know, it's, I guess, hazy. It may not be now. It's been active for so long.
I appreciate you guys taking the time to be here and for having me out. That'll do it for this week's segment of the Tap Room Exclusive. Tune in next week and we'll be going over meads.
Fantastic.
Thank you all for listening and have a great night.
Thanks for having us.